Chelek Tezayin, Parshas Tetzave, Sicha Aleph. With a discussion of the work of the Mishkan concluding at the beginning of this week's Torah portion, the instruction regarding the holy garments of the Kohanim begins. Beginning with a description of the garments of the Kohen Gadol, the Torah tells us that the garments should be l'chavod v'litiferes, for honor and glory. These garments were considered holy. One of these garments, the me'il, was a full-length robe, and the verse tells us was made completely of blue wool. The Torah then describes how the garment is to be constructed. In chapter 28, verse 32, we read, with the opening at the top turned inward, hemmed around the opening with a woven border, like a coat of armor, it shall not be torn. Our sicha this week is a discussion on the Rashi, on the last words, it shall not be torn, lo yikorea. Rashi gives two explanations. One, kidei shelo yikorea, so it should not be torn, is an explanation on why it is hemmed, so that it should not tear. And two, the hakorei over belav, and one who tears it intentionally is violating a Torah prohibition. With Rashi telling us the lo yikorea in the verse tells us the reason why the Torah says that the opening should be hemmed, that this is what the pshat, the literal meaning is, hem it this way so that it shouldn't be torn. What then prompts Rashi to change opinion and tell us lo yikorea actually means that, and one who tears it is violating a Torah prohibition? More puzzling is that the Gemara in Yuma, which discusses the priestly garments, and where Rashi derives his source, that Rav Yehuda said, one who intentionally tears any of the priestly vestments transgresses a prohibition and is flogged, as it is stated concerning the robe, it shall have a hem of woven work around the opening, like the opening of a coat of armor, and it shall not be torn. Just as it's prohibited to tear the opening of the robe, it's prohibited to tear any of the priestly vestments. But Rab Acha bar Rab Yaakov objects to this strongly, and he says, but maybe this is what the Merciful One Hashem is saying in the Torah, that an opening should be made, that it be constructed this way, in order that it not tear. Torah is perhaps giving an explanation, not a prohibition. It's obvious from the Gemara that these two explanations, that it not tear and that it's a prohibition, negate one another, as in the argument just discussed. In fact, some Mefarshim explain lo yikorea one way, as an explanation for this woven armor-like hem, and some the other way, as a prohibition. So how did Rashi bring them as one, connecting the two explanations with an end? Rashi continues his explanation on these words, lo yikorea, saying that this prohibition is counted as, in other words, included in the count of 365 prohibitions in Torah, like the, and he quotes, the prohibition of not detaching the cheshen, the breastplate, the Kohen Gadol wore, from the ephod, the apron-like garment that it was attached to with special straps, which is discussed in our parsha, and also like the prohibition of removing the wooden carrying posts from their rings on the Oren, which is discussed in Parshas Truma in last week's parsha. Now it seems that Rashi adds these two prohibitions, which he follows onto the words that this is counted as a lav, as a prohibition, because while Rashi's first explanation seems sound, the hem is there so the garment doesn't rip, in addition to that, there's another explanation, while a hem is needed so it doesn't rip, it's also on the list of prohibitions in Torah. Now, this is really difficult to understand because Rashi's explanations are based on the literal intention of the pasuk. So where is there anywhere in the pasuk that indicates in the literal meaning that lo yikareya is a listed prohibition? That Rashi comments on something saying whether it's a mitzvah or not is something we have encountered before. But there doesn't seem to be any indication in this verse on these words, lo yikareya, that these words are in the count of mitzvahs. It's also difficult to understand the conclusion of Rashi, where Rashi brings these two other prohibitions, that the choshen cannot be separated from the ephod, and that the wooden staves and the rings of the aron must not be moved. How are these two relevant? And while most of the commentaries on Torah explain Rashi bringing these two to answer the question how Rashi can say lo yikareya means both an explanation for the hem and a prohibition for itself, because these two prohibitions are examples of verses with a similar composition, one doesn't remove the choshen so as not to separate it from the ephod, and also it's a prohibition to do so, and one doesn't separate the poles from the rings so that it can be carried when necessary, and it's also a prohibition to do so. This just doesn't seem like an adequate explanation, because regarding these two examples, it's also a question as to how Rashi sees this in the literal words of their particular verses. And how are these two explained as prohibitions based on their individual verses, just like we're asking here in our pasuk on lo yikareya? But the fact is that on those two psukim, Rashi doesn't even address this idea that they each have two explanations, one a reason and one a prohibition. If Rashi wants to bring these verses as proof for saying lo yikareya is also a reason and also a prohibition, wouldn't it have been reasonable to assume Rashi would bring this proof from a source where he did actually explain it this way? But he doesn't, which means that those verses, which come earlier in Torah to our verse, and the words lo yikareya don't present a difficulty, and that a five-year-old scholar would understand this on his own and not find any question that would warrant an explanation in those cases. So why here? Why does lo yikareya demand clarification and warrant an explanation like this in our verse? Returning to our first question, how can Rashi bring two different contradicting explanations on one idea as one explanation with an and to connect them? The commentaries generally explain this saying. If lo yikareya, and indeed the earlier examples of not separating the breastplate and not moving the staves were just reasons, then the verse should have read, make a hem shelo yikareya, so that it won't rip. Without the so that, the Torah is hinting to a dual explanation, a reason and one that comes in addition to a reason, a commandment, in this case, in these cases, a prohibition. But what confounds us still, even with this explanation, is that if it is the case, then why, in these two earlier examples, didn't Rashi teach it this way? None of these are written with a she, a so that. To respond to and clarify this point, we notice that with these two earlier psukim, earlier examples, regarding the ephod and the aron, what actually speaks to us first as we read those is the idea that these are instructions. The verse regarding the choshen, the breastplate, not being moved from the ephod, the apron-like garment that held it, reads, and they shall fasten the choshen by its rings to the rings of the ephod with a blue cord, so that it can be upon the band of the ephod, and the choshen will not move off the ephod. The verse about the staves and the rings of the aron in Parshas Truma reads clearly like an instruction. It reads, the poles of the ark shall be in the rings, they shall not be removed from it, So that in these cases, the sheh would have read as reasons, but without the sheh, the so that, these two psukim read as clear instructions. Now, though the grammatical imperative intention is not clear, the verses don't clearly state, you shall not move the cheshen. Rather, it says, the cheshen shall not be moved. It doesn't say, you shall not remove the poles. Rather, it says, they shall not be removed. Yet, it reads as an instruction for the individual to endeavor to ensure that the poles aren't removed and that the cheshen isn't moved, in the same flow as the beginning of the verse regarding the staves. The poles shall be placed in the rings of the Urn. It's an instruction. But our pasuk reads differently. The vowel usage in our pasuk is loy yikorea, a passive verb usage, which translates as it shall not be torn, and not the common usage for instruction. And that alerts Rashi to a shift and a difference to the instructions regarding the cheshen and the staves, which are not written in passive form. Now, this particular grammatical form can be found in the prohibition of working on the first and last days of Pesach, as we learn in Parshas Bo'i, where the verse reads, Kol melocha lo ye'aseh bohem, no work may be performed on it, a form which tells us that no work may be done on these days, even by others. Looking at the two examples of the ephod and the cheshen and the poles in the rings of the Urn, we might conjecture that while the grammatical form in the verse regarding the robe collar tells us that it cannot be torn even by another, the poles can be removed some other way, and the cheshen can be moved by some other means. But that conjecture is wrong. Halachically, the poles should never be removed, and the cheshen never removed. And so the passive verb usage of lo yikorea alerts Rashi and the 5-year-old scholar to the fact that there is another point to lo yikorea, not just an instruction, but a reason. Make the hem so that there is no way this can become torn. But because the common sheh, so that, is not used, this is proof that there is a mitzvah instruction here as well. But what remains unclear is why does the Torah not state with clarity, even in grammatic form, that it's a tzivui, an instruction? Why is there only an allusion to it made by omitting the sheh, the so that? An instruction in Torah should be clear, not something we guess at. This is why Rashi continues his explanation, saying it is one of the transgressions. The lesson isn't what the prohibition is. We know this prohibition already, that we may not tear a garment of the Kohen Gadol. But Rashi rather continues telling us that it is in the count of the recorded 365 prohibitions. The Torah, in this case, only alludes to this, and Rashi tells us that this transgression is in the count of the prohibitions. We just mentioned that we already know that one may not tear a garment, and we know this important detail from the beginning of the discussion of the garments of the Kohen, which we are told must be l'chaved v'litiferes, for honor and glory, and a torn garment is neither honorable nor glorious. What we don't yet know is that this is actually a prohibition. And that is what Rashi tells us the verse alludes to here with these words in this form. There is still a question that remains unresolved. There are several places where the Torah tells us that something is prohibited, repeating it a second time, making it a double prohibition. Could this be one of those double prohibitions? We have the instruction that the garments should be beautiful, and here in our pasuk that they shouldn't be torn. But all those situations where there is a double prohibition, it's really clear as an instruction, and there is great and dual emphasis so that a person will realize how terrible it would be to transgress the prohibition, thereby making it easier for one to avoid the transgression involved. In our pasuk, when Rashi says, "Hakoyre over belav," the one who tears it transgresses a prohibition, it's only to establish this as a prohibition on the list of prohibitions. It's, after all, not the kind of prohibition that would require a double warning. And because it's only to tell us that it is recorded as a lav, as a prohibition, that we experience it in the verse, in a remez, it is only alluded to. And so Rashi doesn't exactly quote the Gemara. The Gemara says one who tears a garment is flogged. Rashi, whose intention is only to recount this or record this as a prohibition, but not to warn us of it as a transgression, only says if one tears a garment, he transgresses a prohibition. But why here, with this prohibition, does the Torah do this, allude to this prohibition in this way, so we can know that it's considered one of the 365 prohibitions? To which Rashi answers, as he continues his explanation, it's not only here. It's also when we talk about the poles of the Oren, also when we speak about the Choshen on the Ephod. Regarding the Ephod, the Torah tells us, they shall fasten the Choshen by its rings to the rings of the Ephod with a blue cord, so it's on the band of the Ephod. And Rashi explains this to mean that the Choshen needs to be attached to the Ephod and not separable. And the same regarding the Aron and the poles. The pasuk tells us that the rings of the Aron have to contain the poles. In other words, the poles must be in the rings on the Aron. Then the Torah adds the prohibitions that the poles should not move, that the Choshen should not be moved. So it becomes apparent that regarding the Mishkan, the discussions regarding the Mishkan and the priestly garments, the verses incorporate more prohibitions, and it can then be applied to our verse where the Torah says lo yikareya and not shelo yikareya. It should not be torn, and not so that it should not be torn, not as a reason, but as an additional prohibition. From this Rashi, we learn something quite wondrous in halacha. The Rambam writes that anyone who rips the me'il of the Kohen Gadol should receive lashes. Based on the words, lo yikareya, it shall not be ripped. Then, the Rambam says, this applies to all priestly garments. If someone with intent to destroy tears any of the garments, he is to be flogged. Based on what the Rambam says, it seems there's a difference between the me'il of the Kohen Gadol, the robe of the Kohen Gadol, and the other priestly garments. One receives lashes for intentionally destroying priestly garments, but if one destroys the me'il even without intention, he receives lashes. Acharonim explained the Rambam's opinion, saying that the prohibition in Parshas Re'eh, admonishing us not to willfully debase the name of God or of something dedicated to God, is the prohibition for which transgression brings lashes for all the priestly garments. But the lashes for tearing the me'il comes from the prohibition of lo yikareya, not to tear specifically regarding this garment. And whether or not there was malicious intent to destroy doesn't make a difference. Rashi's approach is different, though. According to Rashi, the prohibition of tearing the me'il is part of the bigger prohibition, not to destroy the garments of the Kohen, and the me'il, the cloak, or robe. Chassidus, on Rashi's explanation, teaches us the following idea via the following question. It seems difficult to understand the order of the proofs Rashi brings for this prohibition on Lo Yikareah. First, Rashi brings a proof from the Choshen on the Ephod from this week's Parsha, and only then proof from the poles in the rings of the Oren, which is from an earlier source, last week's Parsha. And in bringing this second proof, Rashi uses the word v'chein, and so too it is, which is not Rashi's usual style in bringing an additional proof. All of which teaches us that the prohibition of not removing the poles from the Oren is an even more novel prohibition than the prohibition of moving the Choshen from the Ephod. Hence, Rashi brings this proof second and again says V'chein, and so too. Looking at the prohibition of Lo Yikareah, it should not be torn, we recognize that this isn't an unusual prohibition, as it's understood that we may not ruin priestly vestments. The proof Rashi brings of not moving the breastplate from the ephod, the apron, while this would not constitute ruining something, nevertheless, from the words in the Torah that Aharon the high priest carried the names of the tribes and thus the children of Israel on the breastplate on his heart for an eternal remembrance before God always, tells us that this removal is not permitted. But the removal of the staves from the rings in the Oren, which were there as all vessels had poles to carry them when needed, is not clear. Why would the poles be kept constantly in the rings of the Oren, never to be removed, even when the Oren was not traveling? Hence Rashi says with emphasis, V'chein, and so too with the poles of the Oren. It was precisely the same prohibition like tearing or ruining the priestly garments. The reason that the poles were kept always at a ready for travel was because, says the Sefer HaChinuch, that if we needed to take the Oren quickly, one would not in his haste poorly fasten the poles, keeping them constantly in the rings. In short, they were always properly placed at the ready and strong enough to carry the Oren. This answer gives us a wonderful insight into one service of God. The Torah lay in the Oren. Thus, the Oren was a place where Torah dwelled. Every Jew who studies Torah is thus an Oren, a place where Torah dwells. But with its awesome responsibility, with this awesome responsibility, one might think that when he learns Torah, he should just be totally absorbed and dedicated to this, and not consider anything else, and not be distracted by anyone else. The poles, ever ready in the rings of the Oren, teach us quite the opposite is true. Even when one is so fully absorbed in and by Torah, to the extent that he finds himself in the Holy of Holies, as the Oren did, where only the Kohen could enter on the holiest day of the year, on Yom Kippur, his readiness must be, and with alacrity, to tend to another Jew when needed, and to bring Torah to another Jew where needed, over and over to more and more Jews.